I really found my stage self in one day because I had been really unceremoniously dumped by this guy, and we were, you know, having one of those 2 month later conversations, which is, you know, such a bad idea. And he said something like, even if you hadn't moved, which I did move and was trying to make it a long distance relationship, he said, even if you hadn't moved, I think I would have broken up with you. And I said, that's completely unnecessary. And I was so mad. And I had to do a concert 2 hours later. And I was so mad that I just didn't have the patience with my persona of being very scripted and very careful on the stage, which is what I thought you were supposed to be, and that every hair was supposed to be in place. And so I got up and I ad-libbed a little bit with the audience, and suddenly this whole relationship happened with the audience. Like, they so preferred that, and I was so much more relaxed. And I thought, oh, so being a performer isn't about saying everything that's pre-planned. It's about kind of figuring out the mood and the feeling. And if the audience is really, you know, very quiet, then yes, drawing on what you know of yourself and the pattern that you know. But generally, there's some kind of energy out there. And the job of the performer is to kind of feel it a bit. You're not supposed to come out and present something that's canned.
So, had you not been dumped, would we have heard of Dar Williams?
I don't think so. That's a really good question. I don't think people would have heard of me if he hadn't dumped me. He was great. Just before he dumped me, he said, you know, you write these songs and they're so all over the place, but you have this one sort of hook that you put in the middle that you can hang all these weird things onto. And if you don't have that sort of hook in the middle, your songs just fall apart. And my songwriting changed after that. And then he dumped me, so I had a lot of time to work on my craft. So no, he was an awesome boyfriend for my career.
Your latest CD is called In the Time of Gods, and I wanted to ask you about the song Summer Child. Can you talk about how that song came about?
We live across the street from a park, and just watching this sort of perpetual motion machine of these kids, we had this sort of impromptu summer camp that was total chaos. So I mean, it was awesome, but it was just, we didn't know what we were doing. And at the end of the day, I was watching these kids. We would sort of hand them whatever we had on our porch, which is like one badminton racket, a baseball, a basketball, a deflated football. And somehow these kids would run across the street and create games with all these sort of odd things. And they were irrepressible. And so I was working on this album that had references to Greek mythology, and my original song about summer had to do with the myth of Persephone, who has to go down into the underworld for 6 months a year, which is the cold months, and then, well, up in north they're the cold months, and then her mother allows the summer and the spring and the growth to come back again. I just realized you can't stop time. It's not about sort of being angry and vindictive and saying, oh, you know, we have to kind of go underground for 6 months. It's all about just sort of having this gratitude that for everything that happens in life, you have this great return. You have this great opportunity to watch everything kind of spring back into motion. And children really exemplify that. And at the same time, they're getting older every year. So if you don't kind of hold that moment of eternity in your hand when you have it, it's a real shocker.
In 1993, you released The Honesty Room. Could you talk about the impact of that CD?
Yeah, The Honesty Room came out on January 13th, 1994. And I think that people say, like, what should I do if I want to break into music? And I always say, you know, make music with other people as much as possible, because you'll be competitive and supportive and all of that is good. And try to write things that really matter to you. And also set the bar as low as possible. See how much you can kind of put onto the love of music and how much sort of financially you can set yourself up in some other way, you know, beans and rice or house sitting or just maybe another job, but that isn't too stressful. So I had that going on when I put out the Honesty Room. And I thought, I'm not going to make a living at this. If I do, I'm hoping to make, you know, something like $20,000. And actually, I think the fact that I went into it sort of wide open and thinking maybe I was going to sell 2,000 copies of it was a good way to go out there, because then everything that happened was this massive surprise. And I think that really made it an adventure, which made me really excited and thrilled to be up on a stage. I was excited for every audience that I got. I really think that made a huge difference.
You said in an interview that early in your career, you played in a bar in Connecticut for $100 in front of five men. I'm wondering, how often do you think of that?
I think of that night whenever I walk into a gig that has a big theater with not a lot of people in it, which happens from time to time. And I remember that actually those five men were all listening, and they all showed up at other shows later on, and they were my cheering squad, and that something special happened that night. You know, it was just a lot of fun during the break. The bartender proposed to me, and, you know, he was already married, but I, you know, it was still kind of sweet. And the way that these guys talked to me about what they heard in the songs, and I was so young and I was so green, it was enormous to me. I mean, it was really such, it was like such a gift. And so I came to understand that you just never know. If you can just remember that these things have a magic of their own, then you have a really valuable tool in your touring life. And that night gave me that tool of understanding that we don't know the results, you know, the outcomes when we walk in.
I know change is a bad thing. Breaks me down into a sorry, sad thing. Not some iridescent, grateful butterfly. I'll resist with defiance. Not the valor of a mystic silence. I will fight the dizzy spiral of goodbye. And it's alright, it's alright, it's alright. It's alright, it's alright, it's alright. Please don't say you don't love me. Never dangle any sword above me. With the kind of change that severs me in two. Give me amberizing glasses. Could you slow it down like molasses as I salvage my old self away from you? Oh, it's alright, it's alright, it's alright. It's alright, it's alright, it's alright. It's alright, it's alright, it's alright. Because I have seen insane things, all those grand historic paintings, morning light on polished swords and burnished pride. Anxious smiles encased in whalebone, spines of steel from head to tailbone, cannons poised to blast the turning of the tide. It's a sad and a strange thing. But it's time and I am changing into something good or bad. Well, that's your guess. And my own sovereign nation, dedicated to a transformation, marching on with this target on my chest. Oh yes, it's alright, it's alright, it's alright. Oh, it's alright. It's alright, it's alright. It's alright, it's alright, it's alright. Well, it's alright, it's alright, it's alright. It's alright, it's alright, it's alright. It's alright.